Hi friends, welcome new and regular listeners. This is Red Ice Creations Radio. My name is Henrik Palmgren and we are coming to you from Sweden in Scandinavia. Thank you for tuning in. It's good to have you along with us today. I want to take this opportunity at the beginning of the program and just say thank you for all the nice emails and positive feedback we've been getting lately. We read all our email, but because of time restraints, we can't reply to everyone. We do the best we can, but it's great to hear from you, and we love to get your tips and your input, so keep it coming. As you know, our website is redicecreations.com. There you can find news, radio, links, videos, and much more. We also have a member section that you should definitely check out. We have our entire radio archive available there. We have extended interviews with many of our guests. We have video interviews and much more. Today on the program, we have Brent Jessop. He is behind the website knowledgedrivenrevolution.com. That's knowledgedrivenrevolution.com. And we have a few very important topics that we are going to discuss today on the program. Like, for instance, the purpose and philosophy of UNESCO, the scientific outlook, and Bertrand Russell, also the Club of Rome, and much more. Brent has available on his website article series on these and many more important topics, and this is what we're going to dive into here today. So with that, let's say welcome to our guest. It's very nice to have you on the program, Brent, and thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you very much for having me.
You know, tell us a little bit about yourself, Brent. I want to hear a little bit about your background, kind of where you're coming from, so to speak, and why and also when you started your website, knowledgedrivenrevolution.com.
There's nothing too special about my background that makes me any more qualified to talk about any of these things than anybody else. I've born and raised in Ontario, Canada, and I have a couple degrees in engineering and whatnot. As far as why I started up the website or when, sort of a long story, I guess, but I sort of had that waking up experience way back. And I think I kind of naively jumped into trying to share that with as many people as I could. And one of the things that I did was start up the website, knowledgedrivenrevolution.com. That was back in 2005 or 2004 or something. And it initially started out as a sort of a news aggregate. It was just sort of a way for me to sort of share different things that I've read, because I found sort of when I'm talking to other people, especially when you first get into this, you get so many new ideas that come your way and so many new things to share with people. A lot of the times you find yourself saying, I read this somewhere, or I read that somewhere.
Right, right.
That's really not good enough. You need something a little more substantial. And the memory's only so good at remembering all the sources and stuff where you got things.
Yes.
The website helped me organize these ideas, and not just for myself, but as a way of sharing it as well. And from that, it kind of grew sort of with me, I guess, and the news articles and what other people were writing and whatnot sort of just wasn't quite enough for me. It wasn't expressing the different things that I wanted it to. So I sort of took the next step and started writing more and more of my own material.
Yes.
And that's kind of where it's at today, where I've sort of settled into this idea of sort of presenting different documents and different books and whatnot that are of interest, or I think are of interest, and letting the authors of these books, be it Bertrand Russell or different Club of Rome books or whatever, and let them speak for themselves.
Yes.
I don't have to elaborate too much on Bertrand Russell's views. I don't have to tell people that he thinks education is a form of propaganda. He says that very bluntly in his own books.
Yes.
So I've tried to approach it from that angle, and it takes a lot of the subjective side of it out. It's not my opinion. It's not me telling people what I think about what's going on. This is Bertrand Russell or whomever, saying these things themselves and gloating about it and saying how wonderful they are.
You know, you mentioned waking up. Tell us a little bit about that and what kind of woke you up in the first place. Was it a specific event, or was it, you know, slowly but surely? How did that come about?
It's one of those things that you kind of go through. I suppose initially it feels sort of like a kind of a sudden event, I suppose. If anything, I suppose 9/11 was probably sort of that event that kind of awoke me, if you want to call it that. But the more you learn and the more you understand about things, it very quickly becomes more of a process. It's not an event where you wake up. It's a whole process, and when you reflect a bit on your own life, you can see how you reacted differently or why you would react differently, because that piece of information that sort of woke me up, you can show that exact same piece of information to somebody else, and it won't faze them at all. They could completely accept what they've seen.
Yes.
But it doesn't change anything within their lives, and it doesn't change their attitudes or opinions, and they don't see anything differently.
Well, exactly. I think that's a very good point, and I guess that this also is something that you obviously encounter, because at the beginning here you did say that, you know, you were trying to share the information that you came about with a lot of other people, and you were setting yourself up in that position to kind of awaken other people, so to speak. But did you find that actually didn't work too well, or what happened there, so to speak?
Well, I mean, it works at times and it doesn't work at times. You sort of learn what other people are looking for too, because it's not just about you sharing something with somebody else. It's what they want to learn and what they are willing to accept or to dig for themselves. You're more, I see it more and more now as a way of trying to spark a fire within that person to learn more and to dig deeper themselves. You can't just keep sort of spoon-feeding people information. I mean, it's not a bad place to start to sort of tweak their curiosity, but it's ultimately got to come from within that other person.
Yes.
And if you don't realize that, you get very frustrated dealing with people when they just can't see things your way, or they can't take that step where they, you know, you can present them something so clearly, in your mind it's so clear, and they just don't seem to care.
Right.
And they're entitled to that too. It's not something you can force on people.
Well,
even try.
Well, exactly, because that's a kind of a fine line to cross as well, because, I mean, we have a branch of people that actually don't want to be, you know, shaken up or waken up from their slumber, so to speak. They're comfortable in their little zone, so to speak, and they've not asked for it, and you can actually end up doing a disservice in a way to people. Who knows, you know?
Yeah, it is a fine line, and you have to examine yourself too. A lot of what we're sort of resisting against is the tyranny and the forcing of ideas onto other people. And as soon as you start to do the same thing, but with your version of it, are you really any better?
Very important point. Very important. Exactly. It's all about that perspective, and as you said, it's also about the internal thing, that what is within oneself, that is ultimately what you know wakes one up or makes one to look in a broader, you know, for a broader perspective, or to search or to find out something more about the world we do live in. But I think that's also a good kind of place to begin this program, so to speak, before we dive into all of the article series and the more details of this, so to speak. What I'd like to do is to just kind of zoom out a bit and get some perspective on this and talk about, you know, your worldview and your how you see the world today, the big picture, so to speak. I mean, in a nutshell, if you can, what is going on, where are we going, and what is wrong with the world?
Question, but
I know.
I'll try to give it a bit of justice.
Yes.
Generally, I think the the realization has sort of sunk in that most of what we have in society has been created for us and to guide us down a path. And that path is very different than how it's sold to us. Be it different types of electronic things that are given to us, and they're given to us and they're sold to us based on our convenience or for our happiness or for our entertainment or whatever. And there's sort of this underlying dark side to these different ideas and these different things that are given to us. And that idea lays out a lot of what you see in your day-to-day life, and you really start to pick up on all these little things that you're given, and that you start to see that you're being trained to behave in a certain way and trained to follow a certain path. And what exactly that path is, I think, is sort of the bigger question, I suppose. But that's sort of what I'm trying to do with the website, I suppose, is these different guys, be it Bertrand Russell or whoever, they lay out a version of the future that they're working towards and that they would like to see come about. And there's all kinds of different names for it, but it's essentially sort of a control freak's dream come true. It's the total surveillance and the total control over everybody else, or the vast, vast bulk of the masses. And that's kind of where we're headed, or that's kind of how I see it headed. And then one of the big questions that comes out of that is, well, if this is the case and we are being guided towards these different things, well, who's doing it? Who's sort of on top of that pyramid?
Yes.
Guiding us, and that's sort of an obvious question that comes out of it. And what I try to get across to people is that the further up the pyramid we go and the further up that we look, the vaguer and vaguer and the more sparse the information we have is. So you have to be careful not to sort of jump at, okay, this particular group is running the world and everybody else is subordinate to them.
Yes.
And I think it's very tempting to do that. And when you look around the alternative media, if you want to call it that, whatever, the truth media, all these different sort of names and slogans that are attached to it.
Right.
But you see the groups develop. You see the division that occurs. There's one group that thinks, I don't know, the Catholic Church is running everything, and there's another group that thinks bankers are running everything, or whatever.
Yeah.
Tons of different groups. But you see that division, and everybody sort of gets entrenched in their little thing, in their little belief, and they just sort of trash everybody else. Everybody outside their belief has now become a shill or whatever.
Yes.
And that's something that should really be avoided, and it should be really clear, because you see it in so many other avenues, but when people get involved in something, it becomes a little too passionate at times, and they sort of shut down the critical thinking.
It feels like they're setting up a little bit of a tyranny of their own, so to speak, when they're doing that. And in many cases, what seems to be the red line, or the connecting thread, so to speak, between all these different movements, is that many people are for freedom, they're against control or tyranny, but yet through their actions of you know, discrediting other viewpoints and so forth, I think personally that they're setting up another form of tyranny themselves, but they're kind of blind to that, you know?
And that's very true, because like I said earlier, when you try to wake somebody else up, it's very easy to become that sort of little Napoleon type character there, trying to bash some information into someone's head and make them believe what you believe.
Yes.
And I think, as far as these different personalities and stuff go, that are constantly on the attack and are so set in their ways is a lot of that is just the ego sort of gone out of control. It doesn't necessarily have to be, oh, they're a paid agent from whoever. Most of our own control is sort of done to ourselves.
Yes, yes.
And these different characters are probably more of that sort of genre. They've become big in their own minds. And once you get a following and whatnot, people sort of lose the bigger picture and their own personal little world becomes much, much bigger than it really is.
Well, very good point again, I think. And also, I think it's a little bit about feeding, you know, because ultimately this is about various types of information. And as a human being, we do filter the information, so to speak, meaning that we are looking in certain areas and we're looking for certain specific types of information that also supports our worldview, if you will. And although that might be good in order to find out things and discover things, it could also kind of limit your worldview, and you might end up actually in a position where you don't have that kind of objectivity anymore because you're solely going out after a specific type of information, meaning that you're trying to support your own worldview, if you follow what I mean, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's something we all have to be careful of, is you have to be selective with the information that you're bringing into your own sort of knowledge sphere or whatever you want to call it, and sort of what you remember and what you take as important, because everything that you read or everything that you see can be interpreted in many different ways. And that's another important point, is that the information that you get, there isn't one meaning behind things. There's always these different levels of meaning.
Yes.
And trying to understand more than just the surface, or more than just sort of one layer of that understanding or a couple layers, is important, because it helps you sort of avoid that trap of finding little bits of information that support you and ignoring everything else that doesn't, which is very easy to do.
Yes.
And if you try to find different meanings within the same piece of information, it helps you appreciate the different interpretations of it and the different meanings behind it.
You know, we're talking about also the big picture here, so to speak, what is going on in the world, where we're going and so forth. And you mentioned this idea of that there are people who are guiding us, so to speak. They have a vision of where human society and civilization, if we can call it that, is supposed to go, or where they want to lead us. One question that obviously arises there is that a bad thing, or do we need structure and order? And if so, how much of it? Is this something that kind of philosophically comes up when you're writing about these subjects and pondering upon this, so to speak?
It is. And there's, again, the people that write about these different things and that are guiding society have justified everything very convincingly to themselves. There's lots of reasons for why they want what they want. Do I agree with that particular view or that particular justification? I would obviously say I don't. Wouldn't be doing what I'm doing, I guess. I'd just be sitting back watching. Is their view better than some other alternative? And that's a very important question, because let's say we do manage by some miracle to sort of dislodge where we're headed. Where do we actually want to go? And that's another big dividing point between all these different movements and all these different groups out there, is,
yes,
is where they see a better alternative. And it's a hard question to answer, and I don't even know if I should be answering that question, because my view of where I would like to go, or where I think a society would be better off going, is it better that I get my views pushed forward than somebody think it's something that needs to be dealt with as on an individual level.
Yes.
And it's not about me telling everybody else this is where society needs to go and this is, you know, the key to happiness for everybody. This is not something that anybody should be looking to do. And I think that's one of the big things that separate the average person or a sort of normal mentality from the control freaks and psychopaths and stuff that run our world, is that they believe they have the right to control other people and to tell them how they need to live and what they need to do and what's best for them. I think if there's an antidote to that, it's sort of in some senses the opposite.
Right. And I mean, talking about that, the control freaks, those who potentially are trying to control the future, what do you think kind of drives that mentality overall? I mean, what do you think it is that kind of produces the will, so to speak, to end up in a situation where you want to control everything? Any ideas or theories about that at all?
The only sort of explanation that's made any convincing sense to me is the idea of the psychopath. And a psychopath in this sense, and in a clinical sense, is someone who has no proper human emotion. It's a person who's born without the ability to feel empathy towards other people. And when someone is born like that, or becomes like that, and there's lots of information out there on psychopaths and how they sort of become them or are born in that case. When you're born like that, there's certain traits that you have to develop to live within or among normal feeling people. And one of them is you become a very good actor because you see other people and you study other people, and in a particular situation they act a certain way. And to not be ostracized, you have to be you act out the emotions and whatnot of the normal person or the average person. And this character type seems to rise to the top, and they have in the system that we have anyways, they have a huge advantage over everybody else, be it in the corporate world. These are the people that rise to the top because they have no concern for anybody that they squash on the way up, the sort of dog-eat-dog kind of mentality.
Yes.
And the same thing within government and any power structure, really, the lust for control and power and whatnot over other people, there's not much else for them. A normal person can have a very simple life and be very contented and very happy within their own means. They don't need other people working for them. They don't need the slaves and all these excesses.
Right.
And these other people can't. They don't have that inner contentment. That mentality and that analysis of sort of who these people are, I find best describes their attitudes and their sort of views of the world. What exactly motivates them beyond sort of a lust for power and greed in these things. I'm not totally sure. I think that's probably enough. Greed and power are very intoxicating things.
Indeed. And, you know, I'm also thinking about all the do-gooders out there, so to speak, the people who want to try to do good, but they're actually, you know, ending up doing bad. They could come from a perspective where they think that they're doing good, you know, that they're trying to help and improve society, and there could either be, you know, fooled into this or trained, you know, so to speak, into a situation where they believe that what they're doing is actually good. And I think that the kind of the administrators of the system that we currently have, the majority are actually like this. They have their job and I think they're doing good, you know. And then at the right, at the top, of course, we potentially have people that are driving the system, of course, that are pushing it forward and advancing it and so forth. But the do-gooders, I feel at least that they're a big branch and a big demographic, so to speak. But what do you think, Brent? Is that a possibility here in the scenario?
I think that's a huge part of it, is a lot of the people that actually make this system work really believe in it, or believe in, again, the different levels of understanding. And if you swallow the basic sort of propaganda that's spit out, if you believe that, then there's a lot of good reasons to do and to participate in this system. For example, if you really believe that there's terrorists hiding everywhere and they're gonna, you know, put a car bomb outside every building, you know, any time, at any moment, or they're gonna hijack a plane. If you really believe that, then working as a customs agent or something and searching people and scanning people and doing all these tyrannical things so that someone can get on a plane. If you believe in that terrorist threat, then what you're doing is can be very genuine. You are trying to protect people,
yes,
help people. But the overall effect may not be quite what you intended.
and again, what arises there is that delicate situation, because in that sense, then you end up in a situation where you must kind of not convince these people, but you must in some way try to show them that, you know, from my perspective, you know, this war on the fake, this is a fake war on terrorism. There actually isn't any terrorists, you know, and you, in some regard, have to kind of force your worldview on to these people in order to try to wake them up. And it's a very, very difficult thing, and the balance is very, you know, it's a very fine line there to cross that or not. Do you think it's necessary to, you know, to try to change people into thinking the other way? And if so, can that be, you know, be done in a more you know, pleasant way, so to speak, you know?
It is hard, because to point some of these things out to someone, and again, like you said, for the war on terror, if it's fake, so to get that message across that all the security and stuff at the airports is a bad thing, you do have to challenge that person's worldview. And that's not an easy thing to do, and at times it's not even the right thing to do, because people take a lot of comfort and security out of their own worldview, and if you come along and shatter that, that sort of leaves that person in a bit of a limbo and a bit of a sort of shaken state where they don't have a belief system to hold on to anymore, and you can do a lot of damage to people.
Yes.
If you shake it.
And I guess that's also, I mean, in many cases, I think that's a good thing overall anyway, because I mean, we're stuck on this planet, you know, for now, and this is how things are here. We can't, you know, touch everything with our, you know, cotton mittens and not try to hurt anyone here and there or what have you. You know, it's a very delicate balance, but overall I feel that it's important to also, you know, people should know what's going on one regard, and they should know what the heck is happening, and one shouldn't be afraid to also share, you know, the worldview that one has, you know, that's how I feel at the end of the day.
I agree with that. But it's always delicate, and it's always you have to also be concerned about that other person too. You can't just not everybody's willing and ready to learn, and not only for that other person, but for yourself. If you try to push these ideas on some people, you will get unfortunately, you'll get a very hostile resistance.
Yes.
And
yes.
It's not something that we should be afraid of or be timid about.
Exactly.
But it is a reality, and we kind of have to deal with that. I don't know what the best approach is. I don't know if, you know, going going around screaming to every stranger that you know, you can, you know, get their ear.
Right.
That these things are the case. It's sort of a personal decision whether you approach somebody or not about these things.
Yes.
Because you do have to mind other things about your own life and your own security and whatnot.
Of course.
Because you will be treated as a crazy person if the person you're talking to views you as such. So you have to tread lightly, unfortunately.
Exactly. Well, that's true, and I guess the approach of also what you've done, so to speak, you're setting up a website, you're publishing your articles, you're writing about it, you're processing the information, you're sharing your perspective in maybe a few other articles then, and a consequence of that, of course, is that when people are ready for themselves, when they get their eyes open or they just want to find out more, then your material is there and people can proceed from there, so to speak.
Yeah, that's kind of what you hope with a website. It's very passive in that sense. You can kind of come and go as you please, and you can't really force a website onto somebody.
Yeah.
So it does do that. But again, a lot of the times you end up sort of preaching to the choir too, because you won't reach the average person.
Yes.
With a website like mine or whatnot. So you are very limited at times of who you can speak to or who you can communicate with a website and with sort of your day-to-day life and the different people that you run into. You don't have to share everything that you know. You don't have to give this person a whole new world view that you've met or that you know.
Right.
You can point out little things that if they're willing to learn, they'll grasp at things that challenge their worldview in a sense, but not be a polar opposite. You can do little things like stay on the War of Terror theme. You can say, well, checkpoints and stuff that they have now where they're checking cars for this and that, or at airports and whatnot. You can point out something simple like the Soviet system and how they used to do these things and why people, or why it was so horrible with the Soviet system.
Yes.
And try to draw parallels to things that they've already accepted as bad or accepted as evil. And you can sort of approach things differently and then sort of walk them through the information. You don't have to sort of overload that person with a very strong, very strongly different worldview.
Yes. I mean, this is very philosophical of a nature, the discussion we're having, nothing wrong with that. I want to squeeze in one more of these kind of questions before we move on to the meat, so to speak, and get into a little bit more of some of the article series you've written. But one thing I want to ask you again, because I think it's an important point and interesting hearing your perspective on it, and that is, do you think it's also potentially a wrong, how should I phrase it? It's the outlook that we might have, you know, that are interested in information like this, is that, okay, great, now let's awaken the entire world here and tell everybody about it in one sense. But could it be that the information also isn't for everyone in that regard? People potentially aren't ready for it, and there actually never is going to be a huge awakening. This is for a small elect few. Do you think that's a possibility at this stage?
That's quite the question. It is at times. It certainly feels like that, where the idea of awakening everybody or creating some sort of mass movement is futile, and it probably is, quite honestly. When you look at the things that we're up against, I mean, look at the propaganda machines and whatnot, and the subliminals and the advertisement. And this entire system is so enormous and so well thought out. If we think we can come along with a couple of websites and whatnot and dismantle this system, I think is probably kind of naive.
Mm.
And maybe that's a little on the depressing side, that people like to think that they can just kind of come along and we'll have a nice little revolution and everything will change. but it's not quite that simple. And I kind of lost my train of thought.
No problem. I follow what you mean. I hear what you're saying, so to speak. And it's you know, I feel that it's that idea that you're talking about, the mass awakening, so to speak. And I agree with you there, because it feels like it's a bit, then it's going to be another popularity stunt, and to some extent, certain esoteric information already, you know, is becoming, you know, mass popular. We can even look at, you know, the Da Vinci Code or what have you, in order, you know, to just see what potentially happens. You know, it gets inflated and put into the mainstream, and nothing really kind of happens with it, so to speak. I feel that the information and the so-called awakening process is more, as we talked about at the beginning, more individual, and it's more delicate and personal than that, meaning that it's probably never going to be a mass you know, thing you can sell to the mass, so to speak. It's going to be highly fine-tuned to each individual. That's how I feel at this point, at least. We'll see what happens here in the years to come. But
I agree with you on that, where it is an individual thing. When the further down the rabbit hole, or whatever you want to call it, you go, it becomes more and more personal.
Yes.
And you start to learn things that you just can't really share with other people. And that's not a bad thing at all. Some of the more profound things you experience in life are on an individual level, and you can't,
yes,
share it with people.
Yes.
And there's nothing wrong with that. And if you did come out with something that appealed to the masses, if you want to call it that, to most people, would you have to drain so much of the detail and so much of the life out of the idea that it becomes just another propaganda stunt?
Yes.
And does it lose everything that it means in that process? It's an important question.
Very important. So, I mean, where do you think we are heading? Do you think that we're going to get into some of the plans here later on, of course, but do you think that we're on that track now, and things are going well for the powers that be, and the think tanks, and these people that we're talking about, the control freaks of the world? Are they achieving their goals, do you think, or are we looking at a world where, you know, a few parameters, so to speak, have come into the picture, which has upset it a little bit? What do you think?
I don't think I have too optimistic an outlook when it comes to that. I think they're pretty much chugging along at the pace they want, and they're kind of dictating things as they go. Is it possible for us to sort of upset the system? I think it is possible. Because a lot of these different things are very interconnected. A lot of these different ideas, like sort of a push towards the world government and using global warming and these different things to promote that and to achieve that. If you upset one of these ideas or one of these things, it could get things out of sync and kind of mess things up a bit for them. Could that be turned into something that snowballs a little? I don't know. I don't think I'm quite that optimistic, but we don't have a lot of choice in the matter. I mean, if we sit back and do nothing, well, they'll get exactly what they want. If we try to resist, well, there's a slight hope in that.
Yes, yes.
All we can really ask for at this point.
I agree. Very good point. Let's see here. We have about 10 minutes left here in our first segment. Why don't we dive into it a little bit, so give a taste of what you're going to go into a little bit later as well. I mean, I noticed that you focus a lot on Bertrand Russell. You have a whole series called The Scientific Outlook. That's, of course, that examines his book by the same name. Why do you think it's important to look at a guy like Bertrand Russell today?
Part of the advantage of going back a bit and looking at some of these older books, like the Scientific Outlook, go It was published in 1930. And why it's important to go back and look at that, same reason any history is important, I suppose, but gives you a perspective on where you've been and where you're going. But someone like Bertrand Russell, and there wasn't any particular reason why I chose Bertrand Russell. There's nothing really special about him. There's a whole host of other people that books I could have used, but it's the fact that when he talks about creating a scientific society, you can look back at whatever 80 years ago, and the things that he's saying this society needs to become, and this society is going to become, and that they're working towards, have come to fruition, a lot of it. If you talk about different ideas that are today, you can talk about different technologies that are coming, and RFID chips and brain chips and different things, and people can find that a little too far-fetched. But when you go back a little bit, and then you can show these guys and these different characters saying, the future is going to be like this. And then when we're living it, you can look around and see it actually happening, or it's actually here.
Yes.
And that's a big advantage of being to show people that they have been working towards these different things, and they have accomplished them. And some of the things they've mentioned, they may not have fully accomplished, but you can see over 50, 100-year span how these things have become within reach. And that's sort of the reason for going back a fair bit in time for getting some of these different authors.
Yes. You're talking about the scientific society, some of his ideas, Bertrand Russell's ideas on how to manage society, how science and technology are going to help to shape, his picture of the world. When you're reading his material and looking into what he's been studying and so forth, and what he has proposed, I guess, is it clear of what the interface, so to speak, is between his ideas and how they have become implemented in society? I mean, are there agencies that you discovered that actually have picked up on his ideas and also mentioned that they did this in the process?
An obvious one that stands out from my website is the Club of Rome, that is a think tank, and they've promoted certain ideas, and they're filled with influential people. And a lot of what Bertrand Russell talks about, his scientific society, a big part of that is this idea of an organic society. And that's based on the idea that everything's very interconnected and interdependent, and all these different buzzwords that they have, and that an organic society is, the society itself is organic, or it's living, and that different parts of that society would represent a liver or a heart or whatever, and that the society as a whole has more value than its individual parts. And that's kind of what an organic society is, or an interdependent society. So you would have, on a world scale, which is what they promote, this internationalism, you'd have one area, be it China, that would be industrial, and they would be producing all kinds of different things for the rest of the world, and there would be another area, say the breadbasket of North America, would be producing the wheat and corn and different things for the rest of the world. You would have all these specialized areas that are completely dependent on all the other areas. So you lose that independent groupings that would, again, if there's no independence, there's no resistance. If you're completely dependent on a system to feed you, you can't go out and bite the hand that feeds type thing. You can't resist very well when they can just shut off the food supply, and it won't be long till your resistance is gone.
Yes.
So you take that idea from Bertrand Russell, where they talk about this organic society, and you fast forward a bit to the Club of Rome that came, sort of started up in the late 60s, early 70s, and they're promoting this idea of organic growth. And they do it again, they add to this idea of this integrated society and this integrated world. And they add terms like sustainability that needs to be worked into it and whatnot. And as they're promoting this organic society, they also talk about how they're going to actually make it happen. And one of the ideas that they mention specifically is global warming and an environmental movement and famines and these different things where they can unite the world. They need a common enemy for the world. In their sort of way of thinking, the only time countries could be held together was when there was an external enemy.
Yes.
And so if you want to take that idea to a world level, you need an external enemy for the world. And again, you lose a lot of your options, or a lot of their options. You can't have an evil empire somewhere that's going to be a problem that you can scare people to unite and sort of hide behind the flag and whatnot. So they propose this idea of environmentalism and global warming and extreme weather and whatnot. And when they propose these ideas of global warming and whatnot, then you start to look at, well, how did they actually, you know, make this happen? And you look at some of the members, and one of the guys on the executive committee for a while was Maurice Strong. And Maurice Strong is a Canadian by birth, I suppose. He's a world citizen in his own view. And he's sort of this super bureaucrat. I'm not exactly sure what you want to call him. He's been in and out of business. He's time he spent here in Canada, we had Petro-Canada, which is this, it was basically a state-owned oil company, and he got brought in as CEO, and he reorganized the company so that it was all compartmentalized so that they could sell off all the different bits and pieces to all their buddies for pennies, and then later on, when there's nothing left but a shell, they sell that off too. And he did the same thing. He came back, and I think it was the Ontario Power Corporation that he came back into, which was, again, was sort of the state-run thing, and he does the same thing. He reorganizes everything and privatizes it. So he was big in sort of the industry and whatnot side of things, and he worked for oil companies as well. But he also carries this huge environmental portfolio of his own as well. Back in 1972, he ran the Stockholm Convention on the Human Environment.
Yes.
Which is this big UN, it was basically a big kickoff for the environmental movement, really.
Yes.
There was some lead up to it with different authors and whatnot, but essentially that was a big kickoff for the environmental movement. And then you look a little more into the future, 20 years later, in 1992 at the Rio Earth Summit. Again, Maurice Strong was the Secretary General of this conference, and he organized it and ran it, this huge environmental conference. And what came directly out of that, among other things, was the Kyoto Protocols. That all came directly out of the Rio Earth Summit. And again, that's pushing the idea of global warming, which they've said they needed to have this external enemy to unite the world.
Yes.
So you can kind of see, as they sort of go throughout their careers and whatnot, you can see them working towards these things in these different positions that they have.
Indeed, and you know, we'll definitely want to dive into this a bit more, talk about more of how Club of Rome are behind this, how far back this goes. I want to continue talking about this in the member section, and also more about, you know, we can talk about population, depopulation, and we can get into UNESCO, of course, the purpose and philosophy of UNESCO and who's behind that. There's a fascinating story behind that, of course. But I want to, you know, before we round things up here for our first segment, I do want to, you know, hear your website again, the URL for that, and if there's anything else you'd like to mention to round things up here for us in the first segment.
Sure. The website that I run is called knowledgedrivenrevolution.com, and all my material is up there, be it other interviews or most of the writings and stuff that I do are all up there. And people can check it out themselves. They don't there's nothing else I'm selling or anything on the website, so people can read at their own leisure and take it for what it's worth.
Very good. Again, the website is knowledgedrivenrevolution.com. And as I mentioned, we are going to continue talking more here with the Brent Jessop in our member section. But we'll take a short break here. Thank you very much for this segment, Brent. Stay with us and we'll be right back. We are going to talk more about the Club of Rome and the climate change fraud in our member section with Brent Jessop. We're also going to discuss UNESCO, Julian Huxley, how to manage society scientifically, population reduction and eugenics. And most importantly, we're going to get into how perception is being manipulated via the media and how to get in contact with yourself again, with your own opinion, and how to break the spell of these control freaks. Don't miss our second segment with Brent Jessop. Head on over to redicecreations.com. Click on subscribe to sign up and tune in. Do take advantage of our member section where we have our entire radio archive with extended interviews available. We also have videos, articles, and much more in the pipeline. Thanks to producer Fredrik Pangren, and thank you for tuning in. More with Brent Jessop coming right up.